Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 4:27 p.m. That is Central Time, and today is March 21st. I thought we'd kick off with the yield curve spread. It was down today by about 6 basis points. So, I think the most important thing is that we did have a big pop on the upside about 10 days ago, and that was all in response to the shuttering of a couple of banks in the USA, and then also the crisis at Credit Suisse that's been averted over the weekend. But it has definitely broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but starting to come back down. Now, the time of most acute risk in the stock market is when the inverted yield curve moves up through zero and back into positive territory, because it generally reflects a time when the Fed is cutting rates aggressively. And after a tightening cycle, they generally don't do that until they have a really good reason. So the 3-month yield is up 8 basis points in here today and continuing to steady here. Now, I think what we're seeing is a little bit of position taking ahead of the Fed meeting tomorrow. And I fully expect them to raise interest rates by about 25 basis points, but I don't think that's really the big question. The big question really is, what's he going to say in the press conference, and how much weight are they going to give to the liquidity issues that regional banks are experiencing? Because while it would be easy to blame anyone for what's been going on, the primary reason why there's liquidity difficulties at banks is because interest rates have gone up so quickly over the last year, and anyone holding bonds is sitting on fat losses. So that's obviously going to be something that the banking sector has to take in its stride. And the S&P 500 banks index was in positive territory today. So the fact that basically the merger of UBS and Credit Suisse is effectively a bailout. Well, what that is doing is certainly helping to support the outlook for UBS, because it looks like they've got a bargain out of this negotiation process. So the share was up in a fairly dynamic manner in here today and rebounded really quite emphatically from the region of the lows. And it would be very easy to simply look at a decade of history and say, well, golly, this is really positive action. But the more back history we look at, then the bigger the decline that we saw in 2007 and then 8 looks. I think it is really particularly instructive to highlight that banks peaked early, and then we had a significant problem in late 2008. By that stage, UBS had already collapsed. So now it is just beginning to find support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, there have been a couple of times in the past when it's been able to do that, most particularly in 2013 and 14, and they came to nothing. And then it tried to break out in 2015, and that came to nothing. So it's trying it again now, but certainly it doesn't have a lot of competition from big banks in Switzerland anymore. But then the big question for those Swiss banks is, can they build a global franchise now that banking secrecy isn't their primary unique selling point? And I think so far we don't have a very positive answer to that particular question. But then I think when we think about what's going to happen with the Federal Reserve, stocks continue to steady. The S&P 500 was up 1% in here today and closing out the day right in the region of the 200-day moving average. And this is a very tight range. And we've seen that the price has been steadying on repeated occasions in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And this is the secular trend. So if that holds, well, then the secular trend is still in place. But I think the biggest problem with just taking that conclusion and running with it is the fact that we do have an inverted yield curve. And there are big questions about inflation. And obviously, then we have geopolitics. And on top of that, there is the question of what to do about carbon emissions and governments competing with one another to talk about how they are going to sequester or disincentivize the emissions of carbon. All of that points to a less efficient global economy. And a less efficient economy means that costs go up and margins compress. So it doesn't mean that margins evaporate, but they do compress. So when we think about big international companies, well, there's a significant number that are going through a difficult time right now. So Adidas is one of those, where it trended down between 2021 and the middle of or the end of 2022. And then they lost their deal with Kanye West or whatever he calls himself these days. But since then, in fact, the share has rebounded and it's steadying in the region of the 200-day moving average. Then Volkswagen pulled back exceptionally sharply last week, and it's steadying in here today. Now, they are also talking about making less money on their credit. Well, I find that to be interesting because interest rates have gone up. So that would imply that their margin on the interest that they're charging is not improving, but rather also that there may be less demand for the credit. So that would imply less demand for vehicles more generally. But the share price is steadying here in the region of the 150 area. Then the dollar was a little steadier in here today. So the euro has been stronger now for the last 4 consecutive days, and it's pausing right now. But it has also popped back above the peak that we saw in the middle of March. So there's certainly still the potential here that the dollar index is going to roll over, and it is overdue weakness just from a long-term cyclical perspective. Generally, big trends in the dollar don't last more than about 7 years, and this one has lasted 8. So there's certainly the possibility that the dollar could trend downwards for the next 7 years, and then that would certainly improve the prospects of the emerging markets, and it would also help to support commodities. So, oil prices were also steadier in here today, beginning to unwind the short-term oversold condition. Personally, I am rather surprised that we haven't had a bigger decline in Brent crude, having been at ranging for in such an inert manner. One would generally expect a much bigger decline, but at the same time, it hasn't quite yet pushed back up into that overhead trading range. It is below the 1,000-day moving average, and the 200-day is still contracting, and there's a sequence of lower rally highs, so it's still a downtrend. And I think in order to question the downtrend, it would have to, at a minimum, sustain a move up through the $80 level. And the enthusiasm around oil, I think, is very much tempered by the prospect of slowing demand. When I think about the bullish characteristics for the or the bullish factors for oil, a lot of them have to do with the fact that the major energy companies are not investing in new supply, and the major producers like Russia or Saudi Arabia aren't increasing their supply. And today's strength was more because of Russia saying that they're going to stick with their supply constraints than really any other factor. But against that supply discipline, you have demand that is under threat. And that's obviously as a result of tightening liquidity conditions. And liquidity conditions tightened up a lot last week. And unless bond yields come down in a really profound manner, then liquidity is going to tighten further because every bank is now looking at their balance sheet, looking at the unrealized losses that they have on their books and thinking about what they're going to do with them. But they can't sell them. So they're sitting there. Well, this is n rather similar, but not quite the same to what happened with Japanese banks. They were saddled with these mortgages, and you had this profound negative equity position. They couldn't sell them, and they've been sitting on those mortgages for decades. And that has been one of the primary reasons why deflation has been one of the primary characteristics of the Japanese market, because there hasn't been credit growth. And then, because there hasn't been credit growth, demand for credit evaporated, and risk-taking behavior has pretty much been excised from the market. So then, and of course, on top of all that, you have the demographic contraction and the absence, to any great extent, of immigration. Now, of course, I've been to Japan and I've reported from there that I met plenty of foreign nationals working in stores and in businesses. But as a fraction of the total economy, it's still rather small. But when we think then about Japanese banks, they're still trending downwards. And now it's testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And it's could potentially move lower from here. This is certainly looking like a type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and certainly confirming resistance in the region of the peaks from back in 2018 and then also in 2016. And it's pretty much the upper side of the base formation that's been forming now for most of the last 15 years. Then when we zoom out and look at the Nikkei, well, the index has been ranging and it was in negative territory again in here today. So when we think about the dollar getting weaker, then the relative strength of the yen over the same time frame, that's putting downward pressure on the stock market. So in many respects, the stock market in nominal terms needs a weaker currency. And there is obviously the potential that if the dollar goes down, then it's going to put upward pressure on the yen. Then, even with some dollar, tiny bit of dollar strength in here today, gold pulled back in a violent manner. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, I will be willing to buy the dip, but I'm not quite willing to buy this dip just yet. I think it does have further to come down. I suspect at least that it's probably going to unwind about half of this advance, and worst case scenario, it could come back down and test the 1825 area or the region of the moving average. And I think that would be a very attractive additional entry point. But it does look increasingly likely that what we will have is a mild consolidation in the region of 2000 and then subsequently a breakout. And when we then look at gold in other currencies where we've already had breakouts, well, against the pound, gold was a little weaker and pulling back below the 1600 pound level. Then I am reminded of one of the ways that people have valued gold in the past, which was that it would be the a gold sovereign would pay for a nice meal for two people with a bottle of the house red at the Ritz. And if a gold sovereign does not pay for it, then gold is undervalued. If a gold sovereign pays for more than that, well then gold is probably a little bit overvalued. And of course, with inflation in the UK running at 10%, I suspect that that particular metric is going to catch up with the pound rather quickly. or catch up with gold rather quickly. So I don't anticipate that we're going to see the succession of higher reaction lows broken. But we're probably going to get a little bit of consolidation. Now, when we think about the technology sector, well, because the yield curve spread was a little bit tighter today, because bond yields were a bit higher, and then obviously pricing in the potential that the Fed might actually continue to raise rates, or that potentially that we're going to have more liquidity infused into the global economy. Tesla is bouncing, and it's approaching the $200 level again, and testing that sequence of lower rally highs and the region of the 200-day moving average. And it wasn't the only electric car company doing the same thing. Lucid Group was also among the leading advancers on the Nasdaq today, and it's beginning to steady here. Now, I saw Cathie Wood on Bloomberg today talking about her funds and basically saying that one should look on her fund as a private equity instrument, that they're buying into companies that are very early in the hype cycle, or I guess in the commercialization cycle. But the fund was steadier in here today, and it does now have a higher reaction low. Now, it has not yet broken back above the 200-day moving average. So there's bets certainly being put and placed, not just in the US or within the technology sector, but when we look at the European markets, with so much uncertainty around the banking sector, the Euro Stoxx index has popped on the upside in here this week, bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. The pound continues to hold the 120 area versus the dollar, and the FTSE 250 has rebounded from the 18,000 level. So not quite as strong as the Euro Stoxx, but certainly starting to steady and potentially could unwind the short-term oversold condition. But this is all in anticipation of the Fed raising rates tomorrow and then subsequently saying we're done, and that there aren't going to be any additional rate hikes, and that the threat to the economy is severe but contained, and that we have met our objective of getting inflation under control so we can start easing back. Now, if they give that kind of benign signal, I think that's what stock markets are beginning to react to. Of course, if we get anything else, then I suspect that we're going to see markets rolling over, and the short-term steady action that we've seen will begin to ebb. So it really does all. I don't like these kinds of markets where what one person has to say is going to shape the outlook, but that does appear to be the case on this occasion. Now, of course, we also have Xi Jinping and Putin meeting in Russia, and being very buddy buddy. And there's the possibility that the relationship, which has long been suspicious between Russia and China, will thaw, with China being the senior partner and the old big brother Russia becoming more subservient. And if I severely doubt that Russia is particularly happy with that situation, but it doesn't look like they're going to have much choice. And that would solve the energy price conundrum for China. So the number one advantage the USA has gained isn't really about technology over the last decade, but more that they went from being the biggest energy importer to being a net exporter. That created a geopolitical dividend for the country, and every other major economy has been trying to imitate it. And China, having more of a friendly relationship and cheaper contracts with Russia, certainly helps to solve that particular issue for them. Then, of course, India is importing directly from China. And of course, then you have Europe. And Europe is not as no longer are buying from Russia and doesn't have the luxury of paying for imports in euros any longer as a result. Now, natural gas in Europe is beginning to steady. You have big buyers like utilities saying they expect prices to jump back to what about 100, and that would be a doubling from where they are right now. What it also suggests is that we're not going back into the long base formation. I think it's very unlikely that we're going to go back up to 300 euro, but back up to 100 and ranging in a volatile manner with 100% trough to peak swing, I think that is quite possibly what we can anticipate the future to be. And it would suggest then that there will be demand for exports, LNG exports from the USA to Europe, and US natural gas prices are steadying in here today. So it does suggest that the lows are in and that natural gas is unlikely to fall much further than it already has done. And most particularly, it also helps to highlight that when natural gas in Europe becomes competitive with coal, that's the point at which the demand starts to spike. And we saw headlines just a couple of weeks ago that that was in fact the case, and now natural gas is steadying. So it would suggest that that is how buyers in the EU are looking at the market, and that's likely to be an increasingly important characteristic for the US market as well. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.